Hey guys, this is Kevin Cicchini from Checkpoint News here, and I'm actually driving right now. This is October the 26th, 2018, and I just wanted to have a quick conversation regarding a conversation that I had in class with a professor of mine. And, you know, he was spewing the predictable narrative that derives from a novel that we're reading about basically a bunch of poor people are, you know, under the boot of the capitalist owner of this business, and you know, they have nowhere else to go, and you know, of course they create this false dichotomy where it's like either, you know, you go and you choose to work for this capitalist and be a quote wage slave, or you end up starving, right? And so they create the false dichotomy between starvation and wage slavery. So, of course, I mean, this just empirically is not true. It's not as though you're not limited from being able to attain other better jobs. I think I think they act as if it's impossible to improve your skill set. It's impossible to get people to invest in you as a person, and all of these things. It's so obviously one-dimensional that it's not even worth dismantling in this conversation right here. But basically, that wasn't even the primary issue. The primary issue was that he kept referring to it as systemic violence and as coercive, right? And I think the reason for referring to it as coercion was due to the circumstances being such that the incentives were, you know, to work for the person far outweighed the incentive to not work for the person, and because the incentives were so strong, and that, you know, they would be in dire circumstances if they didn't work for that person, well, then it's somehow coercion because of a fact of nature, which is that resources are scarce and humans are sort of born into a hostile environment. That's something that's core and fundamental to people who understand the human condition. Okay, so they're coming from this perspective that we have a baseline that is in the ideal, that is sort of Platonic, that we should all have these positive rights and that things should be a certain way that you're not really able to empirically measure or anything. And there can be no consistent standards. It's just sort of I just want people to have good things, and that's not really a prescription for universal rules, now is it? So I think the main issue was that he, and of course this is not unique to him, I mean, he's getting these talking points obviously from the other Marxists in academia, and I was trying to explain the importance of differentiating between coercion and non-coercion. So taking a job because your circumstances dictate that you sort of need that job in order to make ends meet is not coercive. That's kind of more like the state of nature that we're in, that we're sort of working to cooperate to make better. So the state of nature is malevolence and suffering, and I tried explaining this before, but what we do is, through trade and cooperation, we make that suffering better and more tolerable, right? So it's not as though you first are deserving of all of these positive rights and resources, and then they're simply taken away from you through the capitalist class. It's that, as a fact of nature, us humans are born into a hostile environment in which we must adapt using our cognitive abilities, and part of that adaptation is trade, and it's not just trade of goods, but it's also trade of services. And with each trade, you know, I value whatever I'm getting out of the interaction more than what I'm giving up, and the same is true with the person that I'm trading with. And so there's a net positive to the society, and that's sort of how wealth is, how wealth grows, right? So, again, people having scarce resources, that's a universality between all humans, or across all humans, rather. And that's not something that's limited to the poor. I mean, at a certain point, it's like I could make the argument that, well, why am I at the university, or, you know, listening to this lecture? Well, I'm at the university listening to that lecture because it increases the probability of me being able to get a stable job in the future that I can use to gain more resources for myself and my future family. So, yeah, I mean, we're all subject to the necessity to acquire resources and having to sort of appeal to our fellow man in order to garner more resources for both us and them. And that is just a fact of life. Now, by that definition, because if you say everything's coercion, then really nothing's coercion. It becomes a meaningless term, right? Because if you say all necessity for resources and scarcity in resources is systemic violence, then how do you properly distinguish between, you know, actual objective coercion and, you know, just something that you subjectively deem to be an unfair, unfavorable situation? And see, they purposely conflated, and I brought that up. I explained that it's important to have a distinction, and he literally told me that it's good that we blur the lines. You know, it's good that we blur objectivity so that we can't tell the difference, you know, for the sake of some sort of abstract artistic goal. And I think a lot of this, you know, comes out of the idea that being abstract for the sake of being abstract has some sort of inherent value, or that being abstract means that you don't need to be rational. If you just are abstract and you use a bunch of big words like epistemology, then you don't have to actually have any sort of rational consistency. You can just say, well, I'm talking in abstractions, but what you really mean is you are purposely trying to confuse people is what you mean. You're obfuscating purposefully. So that's, it seems kind of disingenuous to just throw out rationality and just say, well, no, it's good that we don't have a definition. So I think that might be what I title this. Leftists hate objective definitions. It's crazy because you put a definition down and then they can't call everything violence. They want to call everything they don't like violence. And that's dangerous, right? Because it means that the word is meaningless at a certain point. So because what I said was other than a degree, right? So by that definition, we are all subject to this, quote, structural violence, because at some point, we all have to gather resources. So you're saying, well, for the poor people, it's just for the poor people. It's just for people who aren't well off. Okay, so where do you cut it off? It's like, let's say someone who's making $10,000 a year, and you say, okay, well, there's a structural violence against them. Never mind all of the potential welfare benefits they can get. That never comes into the equation. But let's say 15,000, 30,000. Where do you cut it off? Like, where does it become, okay, I have structural violence and I don't? And is it just being a consequentialist? Is it just saying, well, you know, from the argument from effect, which is, as long as I've acquired enough resources, the rules have been the same, but everything's okay because I happen to win. And so for everyone who wins, it's not structural violence. But for those who don't win, it is structural violence, but not based on any sort of objective rules that are being broken just because I don't particularly enjoy the outcome, right? And that's sort of annoying because, again, it devalues the definition and of violence and coercion, more specifically. So I think that's crucial, right? Because I was going to explain it. I didn't have enough time, but I was going to explain it in this way. So here's an example of the difference between coercion and just sort of being a jerk, but not being coercive. So let's say someone is, theoretically, you know, well, we're going to go into some theoretical examinations here. As per usual on the Checkpoint, show, I should say. I guess the official podcast is the one we do on the weekends. So I hope you guys like these conversations. I'm going to try to do them a little more often. You know, when things are in my head and I'm driving, it's better and more productive for me to explain these things. So it makes for extra content. So the example I was going to bring up, if I had time, was that let's say someone is, you know, on the edge of a cliff and they're hanging off, and they just are hanging off by basically their fingers, and they're able to hold themselves up, and they probably have, you know, another 5 minutes of, you know, strength left before they fall and have a rather unpleasant death. Well, let's say there's another guy. So that's Bob, and then there's Joe, and Joe is... So Bob is the guy who is hanging from the cliff, and then Joe comes up, and Joe looks at Bob and is like, "Oh, that's sort of a bad situation to be in. I wouldn't want to be in that situation. That's terrible." And so, you know, Bob starts screaming, "Please, can you help me?" And Joe just says, "Ah, you know, I don't think so. I don't really want to help you. Have a nice day." And then he just walks away. Well, obviously, that's a terrible thing to do, but it does not mean, it does not meet the objective definition of coercion. So that's important, right? Because just because you think something's bad doesn't mean that you throw random adjectives at it. You know, I think a lot of things are bad, but I don't just call them negative adjectives just, you know, to make it seem worse than it is, because that's sort of, you know, an impulsive, irrational thing to do. But leftists are known for impulsivity and irrationality, so that doesn't surprise me in the slightest. So basically, the problem that I see is that you make this distinction, and of course they try to jump around it any way they can, and I think the example of coercion would then be, of course, to say that if Joe came up and stomped on the fingers of Bob to make him preemptively fall, that would be coercive because, you know, he is enacting violence. So enacting violence or using the threat of violence would be violent or coercive, right? So I think that's a clear distinction. It's the physical aggression. That's how you objectively define it. But of course, he was avoiding, as per usual, objective definitions like the plague. They always do this, and it's incredibly frustrating to those who value objectivity, but it's something to be expected coming from leftists. So, then of course, to make it even more akin to his example, I would say, well, you see, it doesn't really matter, even if Bob feels as though he needs to appeal to Joe on a social level in order to get him to help him, right? Because, you know, that would be somewhat akin to, let's say, the downtrodden man who has to go to work for the, you know, stereotypical evil capitalist. Let's say that's the social appeal, you could say. He has to appease in order to get his wages, in order to live, right? So it's somewhat akin to that, right? And I would say, but it's still not coercive, right? Because his feeling, his subjective desire to appeal to Joe for the sake of living is getting him to perform a positive action in order to save his life. It's not necessary. So, in effect, that's akin to the transfer of resources, right? So it's not as if he is enacting aggression on you, though. It's nature and gravity that is going to do you in if he doesn't. So it's, and again, it's the same thing when it comes to our baseline with biology. And of course, it never happens that there's just this one, you know, this weird nightmare scenario that they always paint where there's a town and there's one factory and there's one capitalist owner who literally does no work, but all of the workers have to go and slave away for, you know, 23 hours a day, and then they get their, you know, they get their 1 hour of sleep, and they might as well just stay there, and, you know, this is completely disconnected from reality. These things never happen, of course, but even so, we'll take your ridiculous example that doesn't actually exist and would be impossible due to competition and various other forces. Let's just take your example to its, you know, extreme and say, okay, fine, it's still not coercion. Even if you feel extremely compelled because of biological incentives, it's not coercive. It is not violence unless it is some sort of physical aggression or threat of physical aggression. So that is absolutely crucial to understand. And of course, he, you know, was avoiding that. He just kept going to the vagueness of, you know, structural violence. Just, he was trying to blur the line, so it seems as though people freely interacting and exchanging goods and services is somehow violent because it doesn't end up in an egalitarian fashion as he would prefer it to. There's a Pareto principle, and some people have more abilities than others, and it ends up, you know, that ends up happening. Well, you end up seeing that manifesting throughout the market. And that's fine because those people end up helping everyone at the bottom in the long run. So it's really, and I'm not even going to go into Marxist theory right now because I'm actually at the gym right now. But I just wanted to say, you know, and the last point was, it was kind of funny because someone actually mentioned taxation. That is actual coercion. That is actually objectively definable. You can define coercion, and then that would fit the, that would conform to the definition of coercion. The taxation, right? Because it's fundamentally not voluntary. You cannot avoid it. It is at the threat of gunpoint, right? And it is from the state. And that is actually the fundamental distinction. And he absolutely avoided that. He downplayed it. He's like, I guess the government is going to take some taxes out, but let's get to the root of it, right? Let's get to the root of it. And of course, he just avoided it because that doesn't fit his narrative, right? It's the capitalist who provides you employment that's exploiting you, not the government who's actually stealing your income. Objectively stealing it. Like, they are stealing it according to the definition of theft. So, again, these people, I truly believe, are delusional. I think they have an enormous confirmation bias, and they're working hard every day to indoctrinate the youth to vote for Democrats. And I really hope that this does not have an adverse effect on our election in 2018 that's coming up very soon. You know, I can't say for sure. I mean, this is just a microcosm of a larger issue of professors, Marxist professors, indoctrinating their students. And this is a massive issue. And it really makes me concerned, right? Because I keep undercutting his points and asking these questions and probing to make, you know, to reveal the irrationality of the claims. And I don't think he likes that very much. You know, that's okay. But it was really, it was an interesting exchange. So thank you guys so much for listening, and I'll talk to you soon.
Before you go, make sure to subscribe to our channel, make sure to like this video, and please click the bell to get our notifications in order to fight the YouTube censorship. Please make sure, if you are a longtime listener, or even if you're not, to go on to checkpointnews.com/donate to reciprocate the value back to us that we are providing to you. And please, if you cannot do that, then go over to checkpointmerch.com, and then you can find our wide selection of merchandise items for you to purchase so that you get something directly other than, of course, the great value that we're providing you through these mediums. Make sure to follow us on Twitter, Minds, Gab, Steemit, Facebook, Instagram, and a variety of other social media platforms that we have listed below. It helps us out immensely, and it makes it easier for us to reach you, the listener. Thank you so much for watching.